The central procurement portal for all of government is getting a facelift, and for many it couldn't come soon enough. GSA is reviewing proposals to modernize the fedbizops.gov website and two other associated procurement portals. In his weekly feature, Inside the Reporter's Notebook, executive editor Jason Miller writes about GSA's plans and questions why it took so long. And he joins me now to discuss. Jason, let's begin with what they're actually doing this time around.
Yeah, so FedBizOps, it is commonly known as FBO.gov, and basically it's where all the full and open procurements go to live, and you can bid on them and find them. It's really the public website for a strong majority of the acquisitions that the government does. The problem, Tom, is it's been around for early 2000s, and the contract for it was initially awarded in 2005. So in many ways, it hasn't been updated.
It looks like it.
In almost a decade. And if you've used it, and we all have, it is by far what many people have told me, one of the worst websites in all of government. Now, I know my friends at GSA may disagree with me, but go on it and try it out. FBO, fedbizops.gov. It is no good. So what is GSA doing? They put out a RFQ, request for quotes, through the Alliance Small Business Government-Wide Acquisition Contract, and is asking for a vendor to take an agile approach and to update the website in sprints. And there's a whole list of what we'll call mandatory updates that they're planning for. I mean, very simple things like better search. That's a major bugaboo for me. Things like...
I found it to be a horrible site also. I gave up a while ago.
Even things like moving to, okay, can it interface with a contract writing system? Meaning, as an agency writes an RFP, it can easily move to FedBizOps. So it's some basics and some more advanced things. But what they're basically saying is, help us modernize this and do it in an agile development way.
Now, agencies have been complaining about this for a long time, as have the contractors. I mean, pretty much, as you say, everyone that comes to it is not satisfied. Why has it taken GSA so long for something so crucial?
It's unclear why it's taken so long. There's been problems with the contractor. Simplicity Corporation, while they've met the requirements under the contract by far, they've had some, if you will, external problems outside of the government. Their founder, Ariel Friedler, at one point got indicted by the FBI, by the government, for hacking a competitor's company outside the government space. He has since been removed.
That's going to be tough on a career.
And they brought in a new CEO. And then I just found out just recently, in fact, that Simplicity was suspended and made the case for debarment from September until, or even August, until just this past January. And even now there's confusion over whether they're suspended or debarred still. GSA says they're not. But if you go to the SAM.gov, Systems for Award Management, and you go to the exclusions, they're still listed in the public website as ineligible for government contracts. So again, GSA says they're not suspended and debarred, but the public website says they are. I don't know what that means, Tom. The point is you have a contractor who's had some struggles. You have GSA who's not renewed the contract in more than a decade. So you have a whole confluence of issues, and it's really a head-scratcher why this such important website is still stuck in the 2000s.
So with the agile approach, that implies they'll take one functionality at a time and fix that one rather than try to do the whole thing replacement en masse.
Correct, because remember, it still not only has to work, but they can't wait for three, four, 5 years to update this site. They really do need to get updates going now. And in fact, according to the RFQ that GSA released, they do expect it to be up and running, a major portion of it, at least a major upgrade, by the end of October of 2016. So this year, so early fiscal year 2017.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. Also today, you're writing about a GAO ruling that could give agencies more confidence in bring-your-own-device BYOD approaches to mobile. What's going on there?
So what's interesting about this is, and this just came across the GAO, you know, kind of their legal decisions that they put out every day, and the Consumer Product Safety Commission asked GAO to rule on whether, if they put together a voluntary bring-your-own-device where employees could use their personal laptops or tablets or smartphones, would that, number one, create a violate the appropriations law? Number two, would it be considered a gift? I mean, Ken, is the employee gifting back to the agency because the agency's not having to pay for the mobile device? And three, could CPSC offer technical help back to the employee on their personal device as well? And GAO ruled that it would not violate appropriations law. It would not be considered a gift. And yes, you can offer technical service basically because of cybersecurity and other reasons. So this is a huge win not only for CSPC, but also for bringing your own device across the entire government.
And I suppose now, given the whole Apple situation that's been going on, the agency is going to want to know what your password is if they are responsible for the device.
Well, that's where that the good old MDM comes in, right? If you can separate, which many companies can, personal from work information, it doesn't matter what your password is, because you probably will have two passwords depending on which sandbox you're playing in.
Sure, I guess a lot's going to change now. And finally, a CIO under fire is deciding to retire. What's going on with this latest executive heading out the door?
So, Tom, we talked about this probably a couple weeks back on your show when Danny Harris came under a lot of pressure from the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. He is the Education Department CIO, and he has decided after 32 years in government to enough is enough. You know, remember Danny Harris got into some hot water over his outside business interests and whether or not they were hobbies or whether or not they were a business that he was doing on government time, as well as education's struggles with cybersecurity. You know, Jason Chaffetz, the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, called education the next, great cyber breach just waiting to happen. 139 million Americans have their data in the education department. So Danny Harris, who had, he had some health issues right after the hearing. If you remember, Tom, he collapsed after the hearing. Very scary moment for him,
yes,
his
indeed.
Family,
yep.
Education, probably all of us. I think he decided, you know what, enough's enough. I'm going to move on, try something new in the private sector. 32 years, it's a long career, but it's a shame whenever someone goes out on a sad or on a low note.
Well, if you've been in 32 years in the technology end of government, the changes have been so vast and so completely revolutionary versus 32 years ago. It's a wonder anyone could keep up for that long with the requirements of 32 years ago versus now.
Absolutely. In fact, on my Ask the CIO last week, Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection CIO, who also recently retired after 30 years, talked about that a little bit and said, when I first got here, there's mainframes and, we built our own kind of internet just between a bunch of us. And now it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. He talked about that exact thing, Tom.
Federal News Radio's Jason Miller, as always, thanks for that update.
My pleasure.
You can read Jason's Inside the Reporter's Notebook online now at federalnewsradio.com.